war. And this is Paul Manning speaking. Today, I thought first I'd give you a brief, rather encouraging report about what some Japanese prisoners think of war in the Pacific. On this island of Guam, there are still Japanese. Some are prisoners, a few are not. Occasionally, if you stand quietly on a high hillside, you can look down into jungle and see movement. Sometimes it's a water buffalo, and at other times it's a Jap soldier foraging for food. They still hide in the undergrowth, but when their hunger becomes too great, they'll come out into the open. Four were spotted yesterday wading out into the surf for fish. A squad of Marines were promptly dispatched to this part of the island. The other Japanese, the prisoners of war, you can see any time clearing undergrowth, doing the manual labor required of prisoners, but always under the watchful eye of several armed Marines. Interestingly enough, these enemy soldiers have taken on much weight since becoming prisoners. They have become fat after a time on the unaccustomed diet of American rations. At sundown, as they march back to prisoner of war enclosures, they seem pleased to be out of war, to be eating three times daily. But for a better index of Japanese soldier feeling today, here is the story of an enemy soldier, the inner struggle which confronted one Japanese at one stage of the battle on Okinawa. One day, after a particularly heavy bombardment by American guns, a Japanese soldier sits down and despondently consumes a few grains of rice. He looks across a narrow valley at American Marines who are firing from a ridge from across that valley. He is heavy-lidded and tired. He is jumpy and nervous. The concussion of artillery shells exploding, of giant, block-busting bombs bursting day and night, have left their mark. Then, during 1 hour of quiet, he thinks this. We are so discouraged. We see nothing but American planes overhead. We see nothing but American ships in the harbor and off the coast. What has happened to our own planes and our own ships? And now there is no longer enough food. Some of us would like to desert. We speak of doing this, but decide it would not be fair to honorable family and ancestors. Suki, however, has suggested we become lost tonight on patrol. And lost they became. But lost or plain desertion, it was the same thing. Yet to the Japanese mind, it made all the difference. Faith had been saved. Yet what a far cry this is to the early days of Pacific War, even as recent as Iwo Jima, when to die in battle meant the glory road to Japanese heaven. Japan still have their suicide pilots. They still have their fanatics on the battlefield. Yet there is a feeling here that once we land on the Japanese mainland, those who love to die will be in the minority. Today, Japan knows it cannot win. Two Japanese officer prisoners were brought into Guam. They quite frankly admitted they could not win. And they were more than ever convinced of this when they drove to this island. 3 years of Japanese occupation made little difference to Guam. The native population were on iron rations during that time. But militarily, no new roads were built, no big gun emplacements, and their best airfield was merely a short runway, hardly good enough for fighter planes. But when the Americans arrived, they had, in months only, built roads better than you'll find at Pearl Harbor. They had widened and deepened the harbor. They had moved coral from one part of the island to the other, coral to make runways for the giant B-29s. And when the Japanese officers saw these improvements, and others too, they repeated their assertion, "We cannot win." And yet, one also knows that Japan has not yet found a way to quit. Assuredly, there will be no national capitulation until this war has run its course for a considerable time longer. Yet the overall picture looks better all the time. Meanwhile, the buildup for further assault of the enemy continues. Recently, I was aboard an escort carrier. This escort carrier has played a tremendous part in rolling back the Japanese war machine. This particular ship has been in every naval battle and landing since long before Chihuahua. This ship and its men were out 2.5 months this last time, assisting at Iwo Jima and at Okinawa. Now they are getting ready for the next phase. And part of this getting ready is a new air squadron aboard that ship. Yesterday was the trial run for these airmen just in from San Francisco. In perfect weather, speeding at 18 knots, the pilots all had their chance of taking off from the ship and landing on the deck of this strange flat top. The men who manned this ship were not new to the vessel. They were veterans. Many were veterans at the ripe old age of 19 and 20. They assisted in catapulting the torpedo bombers into the air. And when a fighter plane landed, you could see these alert, leggy kids race across the flight deck to the plane, unhook the restraining wire cable, and then direct the plane to its proper niche further along the deck. There was lots of noise, but never any confusion. These young men knew their jobs, and they needed no orders for the next move. The commanding officer said that to him it was always amazing that such young boys, who were really only kids a short time ago, could assume great responsibility and behave like veterans almost overnight. Young men like Seaman First Class Joseph Baum of 55 East 210th Street in the Bronx, New York, and Seaman Nick Ippolito of 4540 167th Street, Flushing, Long Island. And Seaman First Class Donald Devlin of 1516 Rittner Street, South Philadelphia. Seaman Devlin doesn't work the flight deck, but he does equally well as first loader of a 40-millimeter anti-aircraft gun. During this day of steaming, there was also target practice. Planes flew high over the ship. It was sunny and hot, and as these ships steamed along, pulling behind themselves small target sleeves, the gunners opened up. They opened up as the planes came within sight of the gunners on one side of the ship, and these gunners on one side would fill the sky with shells, and then those on the other side would start in. It was their turn, and it was excellent gunnery, but you knew later it would have to be good. It was pointed out to me that the Mark 14 sight, which directs these guns, is the sight which revolutionized naval gunfire. When we went to war, we didn't have it, and we suffered heavily from Jap plane attack. But the first hour, less than that first hour, that this Mark 14 sight went into operation, directing the guns, 37 enemy planes were picked out of the sky. Corporation, and Professor C.S. Draper of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology were responsible for this development. Aboard ship, I spoke with Professor Draper's brother, Commander Ralph Draper of Navisink River Road, Red Bank, New Jersey. He said the Mark 14 site had proved itself even more at Iwo Jima and Okinawa. But on this island of Guam, where it rains at least once each day, there is little for a serviceman to do but work. There's an open-air movie each night, but when a traveling USO show arrives here, that is an event. This week, Eddie Bracken and his troop came to Guam as the first Navy-sponsored USO unit. Eddie Bracken, as you know, received the Marine Oscar, which they call a gizmo, incidentally, for his acting in The Miracle of Morgan's Creek. And the GIs came through with their award for the best comedian of the year. Well, Eddie Bracken is here today at this microphone. Last night, he was doing a show in the rain. And Eddie, during that rainstorm last night, when you and your troop carried on and pretended it was not raining, well, you certainly had my sympathy.
Well, Paul, to me it was a great compliment because the men out there were pretending it wasn't raining also. They were having lots of fun, and so were we.
I don't know how you feel about this business of Broadway and Hollywood coming to the men overseas, but I found it to be terribly important as a morale builder.
Well, I never really knew how important it was until we got over here. They treat you just like a brother, and when you stand up there before several thousand sailors, marines, and soldiers, I feel suddenly as if I was from everybody's hometown.
And from what I've seen, Eddie, they've been working you as if you were.
Well, we've been getting around. After Guam, my troop will be playing Saipan, Tinian, Palau, and Iwo Jima.
Eddie, I'm sure a lot of people at home who are listening would like to know what kind of jokes make a hit with the servicemen out here.
Well, we tell quite a bit of them, but my favorite, one I tell practically all the time, is the cockroach story. You take a rope about 2 inches thick, and you hammer it up into the ceiling with a nail. And you get a pair of shears and cut the rope in the middle and throw the bottom part out the window. You don't need that. Then you get a string and you tie it on the end of the rope and you let that hang to the floor. Then you get a matchbox with a mirror on it. You open it, tack it up into the ceiling with a tack. A cockroach will come walking along, climb up on the string, up on the rope, but he won't go into the box. Because he knows as well as you and I, because in the box he's caught. So while he's looking at himself in the mirror, you take off the bottom string. And you run out and you get a plate of ice cream. You come back with the ice cream, you put it down underneath the rope, the cockroach will come running down thinking the string's still there, right into the ice cream. Pneumonia. Well, it got a laugh.
It really did, Eddie. And say, Eddie, do you always end your USO shows the same way?
No, not always. The Marines, they're pretty proud of their battle history, and when I played to the Marines the other night, I made a bet with me. I didn't know all the battles of the Marine divisions since 1775, and I'm proud of the Marines, too, and I learned those battles, and I won the bet.
Do you mean that you can recite the Marine battle history?
Oh, sure. New Providence, Fort Nassau, the Second Battle of Trenton, the Bonhomme Richard and the Serapis, Tripoli in 1805, Nuka Hive in 1812, the Battle of Hatchie, Lusty River in 1837, Vera Cruz in 46, Capultepec, the Holes of Montezuma, Panama in 85, Guantanamo Bay in 98, and the Philippines, the Boxer Rebellion in China, Nicaragua, Coyote Hill, Fort Riviera in Haiti, and then Chateau Terry, Yellowwood, the Charge at Soissons, San Miguel, and now Wake Island, Guam, Bataan, Corregidor, Guadalcanal, the Marshalls, Carrara, Midway, back to Guam, Tinian, Saipan, Iwo Jima, Okinawa, and Japan.
Eddie, that wins my bet, too. And thank you, Eddie Bracken, for being with us today on this program. And good luck to you and to your troop as they go on up to Iwo Jima. This is Paul Manning speaking from Guam. I return you now to New York.